Session number 27052.
Mr. Franklin, Reel 4. Now we're coming
Goodness.
To the point, you joined a bombardment. Were you actually firing at all? What happened next, you know, off goal, sword beach?
Well, the guns were firing at certain targets that they were asking for us to fire at, I presume, you know. As a boy seaman, you don't get a lot of information from what's going on. What happened with my problem was when they were bombarding, as soon as before the main armament opens up, you are warned to take cover, to go inside off the deck. I had a chap with me who was on my gun, who was very self-preservation, and he belted down the ladder as soon as the warning went, through the door, and slammed the door handles down. And I unfortunately couldn't undo them, and the guns opened up whilst I was still there. So I took the blast from a 16-inch gun, which I shouldn't have been on deck. I should have been inside, but I couldn't get the doors undone, the watertight door. I couldn't get it undone because he'd gone through and slammed them down on me, which you had to do to shut the doors quickly. But
what's
he
like
beat me
caught?
To it. I didn't get down the ladder quick enough, you know. He used to go down each side. He'd been in the Navy sometime.
And what was it like being caught outside?
Well, I can't remember really. I heard this terrific, as if I've been pushed against something. And I'd got down behind, I'd laid myself, got down when I realised what was going to happen. And I took a blast right in this ear.
Your left ear?
And all I could hear was bells. But I'm sure I must have passed out, because afterwards the guns, everything has gone quiet. And the door opened and I crept in. I didn't tell anyone what happened because I should have been off the deck. Being a boy seaman, no one would listen to you, you know. They don't. That was it. So I crept inside and had to lay down for a while because they'd called, you know, everything had quietened down and they'd called off action stations. And I went inside and just laid down for a while, and I felt all right after a while, being young, I suppose it's okay. But I could still hear bells ringing, and I think I heard bells ringing for ages afterwards. But
you never got any attention for it?
No, I was afraid to tell anyone because I thought, if anything, I'd be in trouble for not being off the deck. But
so
probably
couldn't...
I wouldn't have done if I had, but I didn't at the time. You're so young, you think, oh, I should be in trouble, and you want to keep out of trouble.
So you couldn't have stayed at the Oerlikon while the guns were firing. So they couldn't have the Oerlikons and the main guns.
Oh no, no, the main guns only went on their own. No one's allowed on deck. Once the 16 open up, there's so much blast comes out of there. It's like being near a bomb. But
now what happened next then?
Well, next time I remember is I was on the Oerlikon. And the dive bombers come in.
Tell me, were these Stukas?
Stukas, yeah.
What was it like? What exactly happened for
you? A Stuka came over, and I looked up at this Stuka. We were firing at it, and I saw this what looked to me like a milk churn coming straight down at us. And it looked as if it had a flat bottom like a milk churn, but it wasn't. It was a massive HE bomb. And I said to the chap in the gun, oh, look at that, I said, they're using milk churns now, they must be running out of ammunition. He said, if you don't get your head down, he said, you'll get your head blown off if that hits us. And it was, somehow it seemed to swerve, and it wound down, but it was probably the momentum of the plane. It came down and it went off just beside the ship. It didn't damage us, we were lucky, it missed us, it hit the water. But I remember the sparks coming, and I couldn't understand, not having been involved in a bomb blast before, how sparks come out of water. But as it hit the water, it exploded. And these sparks from it, that was the bomb exploding. That was only about 30, 40 foot away from us, I suppose, and I took a full blast of that. Instead of getting below the parapet of the gun, I had my head over having a look to see what was happening.
Was your chum, was he hitting the Stukas or getting anywhere near them, do you think?
Oh, the tracers appeared to be going straight through it, but it still kept going. I don't, went over the ship and passed. But whether it was ever brought down, I don't know. But the amount of stuff that was thrown at it, we had the pom-poms going full blast, the 4.7s going, the 6-inch were firing, and also all the Oregon. So how that plane survived, I don't know. Unless you actually hit the pilot or the engine, there isn't much chance of bringing the plane down anyway. They could take bullets through them unless you hit a vital part of them.
Did you see any other Stukas, or was this a lone Stuka?
That was a lone Stuka on that time. They did used to come and see them fly, and also used to see the American Mustangs flying along the strafing the on the inside.
Anything else happened during this time?
Not during the actual, as I say, apart from the from time to time we opened up with the main armament picking out targets inland.
Now, and how did you get on with it? I mean, this bloke you were working with on the Ehrlich, and you said he was a bit self-preservation type.
Yeah.
How did you get on with him?
Well, at one time, whether I ought to comment on this, he's probably gone now, poor bloke. He's probably passed on. But when the Stuka came in, he said to me, I'm going to the toilet, when he heard this intercom saying that the planes were approaching, and he disappeared. And suddenly the commander looked over and it started to come in. They opened up and we were told to open fire, but he wasn't there to open fire. And this commander looked over and said, why isn't this gun firing? So to save any trouble, I strapped myself into the gun. I'd never fired an Oerlikon before in my life, only a rifle. And I got behind that gun and pulled the trigger and just emptied the whole magazine towards his aeroplane. All I could see was tracers going up from the barrel of my gun. I'd never fired a gun before. And when he came back, I said to the commander, I've emptied that magazine, I said. The commander wanted to know why it wasn't firing. why the gun wasn't firing, I said, so I opened it up. Oh, that's good, he said, and that's all over.
Was he losing his nerve, this gunner? It sounds, I mean, that's twice. I
think he may have been, or it was self-preservation, I felt, that he was an older man. And since the war, you start to think back of why these things may have happened. And if he had a family, a wife, children, then his idea was just to keep himself alive, wasn't it? Which is fair enough. Because there was a lot of self-preservation concern with during the war. I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Survival. I mean, to me, at 17 years old, it was an adventure, wasn't it?
How did you feel? I mean, tell me about how you felt.
I felt it was a great adventure. I never had any fear, whether that was unusual, whether we were all the same. I never thought of fear. It was all an adventure. I suppose unless you were hit or torpedoed and ended up in the freezing water, you never thought about it until that happened. It was all an adventure. It was all part of doing something, wasn't it? You never even thought of it, I don't think, as war. It was an adventure. War was an adventure for us youngsters, I'm sure it was.
Now, anything else happened while you were off Normandy?
Yes, when we... that was when we'd finished our bombardment and were no longer needed. We were coming back to UK. I remember hearing this terrific bang, and we'd struck a mine on the way out. They'd laid mines during the night or something.
And what effect did it have?
Well, they took in water. They said that some compartments had been flooded, but not enough to cause any problem, because she was so massive. And she had so many compartments down below that they could watertight them and she could still carry on. I mean, there is a case where she was torpedoed in the Mediterranean and she kept afloat, didn't she?
So there wasn't much of an effect from this mine?
Well, the biggest effect to me, the only thing that affected me was the panic stations on the bridge when it hit it. way everybody seemed to be rushing around like chicken, headless chickens, you know.
Now, how did you know that? What were you doing on the bridge?
Well, the gun turret was just off the
You could
bridge.
see it, yeah.
We had this gap just above us, and the people were, the top brass was all up there around that area. And you could hear them running around and orders being shouted and things going on. Of course, I'm just sitting there standing on the gun turret, just listening to it all and get panic stations, you know. But never realised how serious that was. I didn't realise until probably 20 minutes, half hour afterwards that we struck a mine. You know, it was that slow, communication was so slow getting through to us.
And you didn't particularly feel it.
No, it was just this bang, I heard a bang, and I thought, well, it's one of the guns opened up. But it wasn't, we struck a mine.
So what happened next then?
Well, it just slowed up. I suppose looked at the damage. Next thing, we carried on to see. Our escorts must have picked us up, which I don't remember seeing. I remember seeing an escort go by the bottom of us once and suddenly hitting a mine and going sky high. Also, at the time while we were there by the beach, there was a rocket launching landing craft, which was, they were rocket launchers. They were fitted with just one massive rocket, and they were firing and firing and firing, and suddenly it just blew up and disappeared. You didn't see it anymore. It just, whether it had been hit by shore fire or whether it just blew up in itself, I just don't know. I never did hear what happened to it. I had any idea what happened. It was there 1 minute and was gone the next. It just disappeared. And I think it may have blown up inside, or else it may have been hit by a shell from shore. And
Now, so you were hit as you were actually going back to Britain, back
yeah,
here.
going just going back.
And
Yeah,
where did you go back to?
she went back to Southampton. I think we disembarked.
Now, you left the ship there, didn't you?
Yeah, we
She
left. I
left
left
you.
her there and went back into barracks.
Now, not everyone did, but you did.
I did. Yeah.
Now, before we leave the ship, what about how had you got on with the other boys? What was it like? I mean, in the mess tech, what was the relationship like between you lads?
Oh, there was some bickering, but mostly we got on quite well together, you know. We were all in the same boat, putting it bluntly.
And did you make any pals amongst them, or was it close, or?
Oh, we were just friends and got on together, but we weren't, we had very little money. We couldn't go ashore and really rave up or anything, you know. If we did, we'd just go along and wander around a park or something like that. We didn't have much we could do, you know.
And what about the men? I mean, were you segregated from the men? I believe you
Yes,
were.
we were.
Did you see much of them, other than the one you were on duty with that
No,
day?
only if we got into trouble. We were in Jankers, then you were slung in with the men. I did get some. What did I get that for? Insubordination.
Well, tell us that story.
Well, that was when I should have just go back again to when we were first went aboard ship. I went aboard ship, and if I can say this in my own words. I went aboard, and my first job, they gave me a broom and told me I was scrubbing the deck. And I turned round to the petty officer who gave me the broom, and he says, scrub. And I said, if I wanted to sweep roads or scrub decks, I said, I would have joined the B Council, not the Royal Navy. And I was added for insubordination. I got 7 days, number 11. He said, get your cap. And you used to have to get your cap to go before the, because then you went off caps and they dished out.
You remember what happened when you appeared in front of the officer?
Yes, he said, what is this you said? I just told him if I wanted to sweep decks and use a broom, I would have joined the council, not the. I still remember the smile spreading over his face. I said I'd join the council, not the. Navy.
But he still give you 7 days.
I still got 7 days.
And what was it like in the cells?
I did go and said, no, you didn't get sold. You are called out twice a day with a rifle, and you had to run around the forecastle over the cables. The cables were about that high, and which we used to break into a Jankers shovel, shuffle, You know, you just shuffled around, which they called a Janka shuffle, and you did that for about an hour, continuously running around and around and around. She got that twice a day, every day for 7 days.
Now, how did you get on with the petty officers, the leading seamen, the petty officers?
Well, you didn't get on with them. You just, in a way, you just did as they told you, more or less, you know. You had to follow orders.
You know, were they fair? Were they good?
Some of them were good, some of them were bad.
What were the good ones like? What were the bad ones?
The good ones treated you like a human being, the others treated you like dirt, you know. It was just how they, the type of person, whatever type of person you came up against. It's like lots of people in charge, they can either be tyrants or else they can be quite good, you know. Some had a chip on their shoulder, didn't want to be there, but were there, you know. A lot of them were probably just there for during the war, or they were, would rather be at home rather than doing what they had to do, so they'd take it out of you instead, you know.
What about the officers? What were they like?
They were all right, but most of the officers were quite good. They were kept themselves very segregated from the men, a lot of them. I always felt that their attitude was, they were nice to a point that they were getting us to do things that they didn't want to do themselves. But they were quite, what would one say, aloof. Quite aloof.
Would you say it was a happy ship? You know, what was crew morale like? You know when they say something, a happy ship?
Well, the Nelson, I couldn't say. There were so many of us on there that you didn't know one man from the other. With 1,800 men on a vessel, I doubt whether I knew more than two people at a time, you know.
So you had no real idea whether it was a happy ship or not?
No, I hadn't, no, no.
So you left, I think it's the 21st of June.
Yeah, I was only on a couple of months, so I think. Seven or 8 weeks.
And then you seem to have been in Victory for about just a short while, and then you won't go to HMS Excellent.
Excellent as a gunnery school.
Now, what do you remember of your time there? That's on Whale Island, was it?
Whale Island, yeah.
And what do you remember of that? What was your first impression? Because it's meant to have quite a reputation.
Yeah, it was. It was a bit frightening at first, although I think we were treated better than the gunnery officers that were training. But it was very hard going. We had gunnery training all the time, taking guns to pieces, reassembling them.
What guns? Tell us about that then.
Well, we were, as an AA, as an anti-aircraft I was going for, AA gunner, you went from revolver, a 38 revolver, up to a 4.7 gun. So you went through, you had revolver. We'd already done our rifle training.
Well, let's go through these one by one. What about the revolver? What training did you get on the revolver?
Well, we did firing with our 38 revolvers. Done target practice with them.
And what did you think, how did you do with that? Because you've been a good rifle shot.
I was quite good, actually, with a revolver.
How did the accuracy compare to a rifle, for instance?
Well, we were always taught that with you always held your hand, and if you held your hand,
you held your right hand by the wrist.
Yeah, held it down.
You would fire right-handed then.
Yes, I did eventually use my right hand for firing revolvers.
But not from the rifle, still.
No, the rifle's not. But
so with a revolver,
you held it down, and that was to stop, because when you fire a revolver, it jumps. And if you hold your wrist down, you get more accuracy. So you hold your wrist and fire it. And then we went on to Lanchester's, which is a navy submachine gun, which has got a cowling over it.
What were they like? I don't know much about them. Tell us a bit about them.
Lanchester. Explain. They were a submachine gun. They were the Navy's thing replying in the Army Sten gun, I suppose.
Were they as cheap and nasty as a Sten gun?
Were they?
as cheap and nasty as a Sten gun?
No, they were more immaculate. They had a cowling over them for keeping the barrel cool, because the barrel would wear out very quickly because they were rapid fire, and they were much heavier than a Sten gun.
And what were they like to fire? How accurate? Because the Sten wasn't accurate at all. What were the lanterns?
No, these weren't. I don't think these were all that accurate. They weren't too bad, but they weren't all that accurate. They jumped all over the place. You know, they were all over the place.
What were they for in the Navy? I mean, what circumstances
were
they?
Well, I used to use mine. The only time I came back to, after training, the only time I ever used one was, carried one, was on the Orion, when I went out to Malta, out to Palestine, during the Palestine business.
So that's the only sort of time you'd use it when it was in a shore association?
In actual, yes. I was only in training I ever used one.
What did you think of it as a gun? I mean, did you think it was any good?
I thought it was quite a good gun in comparison with the army gun, you know. It was. The barrels had to be replaced quite, quite often because they wore out quite quickly.
And did you practice stripping these down, the Lanchester?
No, the one I did most practice on was the Oerlikon, was I stripped
down.
Now,
tell us a bit more about the Oerlikon gun. I mean, the mechanism and...
The Oerlikon was quite an accurate gun, very good gun. It broke into, I can't remember how many parts, but quite a lot of parts. We used to have about 10 minutes to strip to take it down, 10 minutes to put it back together again. You know, it shouldn't take long to do it. It was worked on a lever trigger, which was out the side, and you pulled it. You had two armpits that you got into. And you
right around your shoulders, you mean?
Yeah, it fitted into your shoulders, like.
Under your armpits?
Yeah. And you strapped, you could strap yourself into it.
Round
and
your back.
You could swing around with it. He had a 90 degree or 180 degree rotate on them. They actually had stops on them for safety, for where you could, how far you could move it round on the ship, because that had to have stops to stop it from shooting into the halyards or into anything else.
And what did you think of the Oerlikon as a gun?
Oh, I thought it was a brilliant little gun. I mean, I sunk quite a lot of mines with them.
Uh-oh, we'll come to that. Well, you thought it was good when you were in training. Did it give an impression that it was accurate?
Well, it seemed pretty accurate when you were firing at... I mean, you get a bobbing mine in the sea, and all that big, and you'd fire at them and sink them with armour-piercing. We used to sink them quite quickly.
We'll come back to that. So what are the guns? What's the next one up? So you had the Oerlikon. Was the next one the Pom-Pom?
The Oerlikon was the Bofa.
The Bofas. Now, what was the
Bofa? Oh, Pom-Pom was the next one up. I never used a Pom-Pom. Never fired a Pom-Pom.
You didn't train on it?
No, I didn't train on a Pom-Pom at all. I don't know why, but I should have done. But never did I train on a Pom-Pom.
Well, what about the Bofas?
The Bofa was one of the most accurate weapons and the best anti-aircraft weapon. But they were German-made, weren't they?
Tell us a bit about them.
They were, what were they, 40 millimetre? I believe they were 40 millimetre. But they were so accurate, and they had such a long barrel, which give you a good range. They were quite a good anti-aircraft gun, one of the best, and very accurate.
What were they like to fire? How did it work? You told us how the Oerlikon worked. How did the Bofors work?
You got recoil on them. You should notice the end of them is about that much. There's a spring in there which takes
about
a recoil.
About 2 foot long.
Yeah, I don't know. I know where there is one if you ever want to see one. There's one in the penal church place. They've got one out in their front yard, a Bofa, off of a ship.
And what the firing them was just, were you strapped into them or not?
No, you sat on them and you worked them by will. They worked by will. You either had single or twin Bofas. And the shell was about that long.
8 to 9, 10 inches.
It was with the casing as well.
And what was the next thing up after the Bofors? Was that
4.7.
And what was the 4.7? That was an anti-aircraft gun.
That was an anti-aircraft gun.
And what
4.
Was that
7.
Like? I don't know.
I never fired one of those. I was never put on a 4.7. They already had their gun crews for some of them, so you did go on them.
So you didn't get training on that either?
We had training on it.
Tell us about the training.
I was only trained on there as a loading number at one time. And all you did is they opened it, you had the shell in, pushed it in, someone else shut the breech and fired. And we on board, going on to.
Hang on now. And so you just, basically, you didn't learn any of the other places in the gun crew at all. You just did the loader.
Yeah, I just did loader then.
Now, what about on all these guns? Would you get a chance to practice firing them at an aircraft, or rather, at some,
well,
a
the
drone?
Orlicans, I did my firing with the Orlican. You probably see that on me. There's a gunnery sheet there.
Yeah, tell us about it. We
used to go down to Eastleigh gun range about 4 o'clock in the morning, or dusk in the summer, and you'd fire at a plane towing a sleeve. And if you were lucky and managed to cut the wire, you finished early and went home.
And what was it like? So this a drogue or something?
A drogue, yeah. It's a drogue. They turned drogue. And you fired at a drogue. And it taught you the aim of. You were told the speed of the plane. If the plane was doing 200 knots, then you've got a spider sight. A spider website, I suppose, for a bad word. And that's got different 100, 200, 300 miles an hour. So you've got that much in front of the sleeve, or drogue, as they call it. And if a plane was doing 300 miles an hour, then you aimed at three sections of your sights. And that you should hit the drogue then.
And this was with the Oerlikon.
With the Orlican, yeah. That's the only one I fired on a tray on those, actually, was the Orlican.
And how
the
accurate were you at the drogues? I mean, would you know what your results were?
Oh, yeah, they would tell you if you hit it, and they would tell you, well, you tell your results you're firing on your sheet afterwards. If you had so many hits, they would give you a percentage of so many out of 100 or so, or 80 or something like that. I forget what I got for firing on there.
Difficult to tell, though, but
firings they would have there.
Their firings, 41 out of 50, so or 77 out of 128. You seem to have done well at it anyway.
It wasn't too bad. Some of them hit the plane.
Really?
I remember hearing this voice come screaming over the intercom, because you could hear the intercom from the pilot. And it would say, take that idiot off that gun before he brings me down. He's already put bullet through my tailpin. So, I suppose it's quite possible someone without thinking would fire at the plane without realising they should be firing. You know, if they were young or something, or hadn't had any experience.
And that was done at the Eastleigh Rangers. Now, any other training you got while at HMS Excellent?
Yeah, we did field training, which was commando field? Course, complete commando course.
Tell us about this commando
course. Oh, goodness me, that was really hard going. You went, you started off with a pack. You were in army uniform for that. You went through the pack, through, over the wall, which you had to toggle to get over this 8 foot wall, over the wall, then under the wire, under the barbed wire thing, which was about so high off the ground, with someone firing a machine gun over your head, which was most frightening, because you think if that idiot makes a mistake and lowers too low, you'll get your head blown off. You went through there, over water jumps, up ropes, down the other side, along, over more water jumps, around, across two wires, across two trees. And I was always unlucky enough to get a 6 footer in front of me. So I was hanging on with my hands and going this way. My feet weren't touching the bottom. I was always seemed to be unlucky to get a taller bloke in front of me. And of course you're pushing the wires apart to go across. And then being a tall bloke, he would push them wider and you could get your feet on the bottom, so you couldn't. So, we did have one or two fall off, break their arms and that sort of thing, you know.
It was quite tough.
Oh, yeah, I did have some accidents. Yeah, there were some accidents.
Any other training at Whale Island? That's an assault course. No other commando training.
You had some parade, occasional parade ground, but very little of that. It was mostly training through the assault course. You're on your assault course quite a lot, and you did quite a lot of commando training, as they called it, you know.